The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Well, Liam Herrick is with me now. He's the Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. Liam, you're welcome to studio.
Thanks
for coming into us. So I kind of was reading with interest the piece in the paper, was it last week? And I think others would have about child victims of trafficking. First thing I wanted to ask you about it was actually to maybe describe to us what we're talking about when we talk about child trafficking. I think it's an abstract term in a lot of people's minds. They know it's a terrible thing. They have a vague idea of what it means, but maybe not a particular idea.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Kieran, because, you know, sometimes when you have legal definitions, it can kind of lose the substance of it. Human trafficking, whether adults or children, is now recognised as one of the most serious problems of organised crime and serious crime anywhere in the world, and it's growing internationally. And what we're talking about is the recruitment or transfer of people for the purposes of exploitation. And the main types of exploitation that we see, and this is reflected in Ireland, is for sexual exploitation, for involved in the sex trade, for labour exploitation. So that could be anything from exploitative work to up to the point of slavery. And also exploitation for criminal activity involving people in crime. There are new and emerging types of trafficking for forced marriages, for surrogacy, for example. But those three, sexual exploitation, labour exploitation and criminal exploitation, are the three largest. And these pertain both to adult victims and to child victims. So in Ireland, where we are now starting to get a more accurate picture, we would say, of the extent of trafficking, the numbers being detected are increasing. What we're seeing is the largest category is still for the purposes of sexual exploitation, and that includes children. So most of the child victims that we're identifying are for the purposes of sexual exploitation. But we are seeing people being exploited for labour exploitation, and we are seeing a growing number of people for the purpose of criminal exploitation. That might be being involved in drug trafficking or, for example, cannabis grow houses. And there are some children that we are now concerned about in this category as well.
And when we say children then trafficked within each of those categories, are we talking primarily about children in this country being trafficked, you know, elsewhere in this country, children being trafficked into this country or out of this country, or all of the above?
I mean, in the official statistics, and our report is the independent national rapporteur, will involve looking at the official data, but also then the services, people working with victims and the testimony of victims themselves. The preponderance of victims being identified in Ireland are from other parts of the world coming into Ireland or being trafficked through Ireland.
Okay.
Now, if you look at, for example, in the United Kingdom, a large proportion of the people identified as victims of trafficking in the United Kingdom are British nationals. So that perhaps suggests that we are not really recognising part of the problem here, that there may be Irish nationals who are being the victims of trafficking. This question of child victims is something we're particularly concerned about, and it's something we're going to be looking into with more research. I was speaking at a conference today about the issue of illegal drugs and addiction in Ireland. Many of the services and community services working with the drug problem in Ireland would be concerned about children being recruited into the drug trade, either holding or distributing drugs on behalf of organised crime, and they would categorise that as trafficking, but that's not really showing up in our statistics to date. In Britain, you are seeing that being recorded, and the same applies with forced labour. Children being drawn into forced labour or exploitative labour that could include people from this country as well as from other parts of the world.
And what are the safeguards that exist that would mitigate against children being trafficked in that way, say internally in Ireland? Because it just strikes me, I mean, things that we engage with the rest of us on a daily basis, like schools and enrollment in school and attendance in school, that there's kind of follow-ups that happen when children don't attend. Is that one of the ways in which possible victims are identified?
Yeah, I mean, it is about multi-agency cooperation. Yeah. I mean, you know, on the news today, there's a tragic story of the suspecting serious harm being visited to a child who perhaps has been undetected for a period of time. Cases like this do emerge, and that is about inter-agency cooperation. One of the positive developments we're seeing now is that until recently in Ireland, the justice agencies were the ones that were responsible primarily for dealing with the problem of human trafficking. And last year, legislation was passed which would establish what's called a national referral mechanism. That would mean that a wider range of services and agencies that may come into contact with people will be, you know, funneling and identifying victims.
Yeah.
That will involve, of course, you know, schools, social protection, those working with migrant communities. It'll involve, of course, training them to be able to detect suspected cases of trafficking. And it also then means that you have to have supports when those people are detected. So we now are at the point of actually designing an effective system. It isn't in operation yet because the resources and the operational guidelines that are needed to actually operationalise it haven't been activated. Mm. But I think we're at a point in time now where we're looking for that kind of wraparound system where anywhere that there's a risk and a vulnerability of victims of trafficking being located, that we should have appropriate agencies to try to find them and help them.
And the perpetrators, the people doing the trafficking, is there kind of a wide range of perpetrator? Are they generally criminal gangs? Are they family members? What are they?
It seems to be quite a wide range.
Okay.
I mean, there is an international organised crime dimension to this. There's no doubt about that. But if you look, for example, at the question of exploiting for the purposes of labour, well, then you're looking at areas of the informal economy and the kind of sectors in which there have been problems of this type, not just in Ireland, but in other countries too, are in agriculture, in fisheries. You know, there are areas where there is car washes, for example, nail salons across Europe. These are some of the areas where people are being exploited and are being trafficked for the purposes of exploitation, if you might call in the grey or black economy.
Mm.
So, you know, that's not about organised crime. It may have an organised crime development aspect in terms of the entry point, but the ongoing exploitation is about people that are involved in business. So it is an all of society issue, you know. And I mean, I think what the data is now showing is that trafficking and the effects of trafficking are not concentrated just to Dublin or to Cork, and they are in every part of Ireland. And that, for example, we also see then when it comes to sexual exploitation, the problem of prostitution or sex work isn't now something that's necessarily visible on the streets.
Yeah.
It's done through online platforms and it's everywhere throughout the community.
And say in those cases of labour exploitation, how is it that you can kind of differentiate between, say, where it's family members involved, where it's having the young lad or the young one in helping out versus kind of being exploited and kind of working against their will?
I mean, we're talking about a threshold of exploitation which is much higher than the idea of some informal work, you know.
Yeah.
But we have
But what is that threshold? Like, as in, how do you identify when you cross that threshold, I guess, is the question
that
I'm asking.
It's a question of seriousness. And we've had cases in Ireland in recent years where people that, for example, may have come into the country on a temporary work permit, but would then be in a situation where an employer would be saying that they're holding the threat of the work permit not being renewed over them, paying them far less than minimum wage over extended periods of time, forcing them to work far more than legally allowed hours, then housing them in accommodation that is, you know, not humane and charging them for it. Like, really extreme cases where even when the very rare cases have gone to the Workplace Relations Commission, you know, the calculation of the underpayment can run into tens or even hundreds of thousands. So, you know, really extreme forms of labour exploitation have happened here. So we're not talking about things around the fringes of a living wage. We're talking about some quite extreme cases.
Yeah. And in some of those as well, it strikes me that the victims are hiding in plain sight, as it were. They're engaging with us on a daily basis. This isn't the example of the kind of children or adults who are exploited to work in the sex trade. I mean, if you're engaging with them, you know what you're doing. But if you're going down to the local nail salon or you're doing other things, I mean, you could be engaging with somebody who has been trafficked or has been exploited and you might not know it.
I mean, this is why I think we need to move towards having a kind of an all of society response to this, where everybody has a responsibility, you know, to I suppose due diligence of the services you're engaging with. But, you know, you talk about hiding in plain sight. One of the challenges here is that victims of trafficking are often reluctant to come forward. And the reasons that they're reluctant to come forward is because they may be afraid of their legal status being a factor. So one of the key steps that we're going to need to have in place to properly eliminate this problem is to provide assurances that if people are the victims of trafficking, that there are protections in place, that they won't lose immigration status, and also that they won't be at risk of prosecution, where they are the victims of somebody else's crime. Now, this is particularly an issue, obviously, with regard to for the purposes of sexual exploitation, but it might also arise with regard to the criminal activity issue. In recent years, we have had a number of cases before the criminal courts of people that might reasonably be suspected to be victims of trafficking being found, for example, in possession of cannabis grow houses, where the organised crime element have vanished off the scene and the individuals who have been trafficked in have been found in possession of amounts of drugs and have received significant prison sentences afterwards. So, you know, this is where they're carrying all of the risk as well as being the victims of the exploitation.
Yeah. How close is the working relationship with authorities in the six counties in the UK then as well? Because I'd imagine the kind of permanent nature of that border means that it's kind of there can be kind of a dual island aspect to all of this.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the key measures for the operational guidelines for the new system that is being established here. Certainly cooperation with bodies across the UK and in Northern Ireland in particular will be essential to this. There already is good cooperation, I believe, between the law enforcement agencies, but it's about a wider challenge than that. And yet what we're seeing is patterns of exploitations that people are being moved across the border, particularly with regard to sexual exploitation, where the most vulnerable victims here are being moved around, partly to disorientate them, partly to make detection more difficult. What we are seeing, though, is that the number of victims of trafficking that are being identified in Northern Ireland are significantly higher than here. Now, you know, there's no reason that we can see why that indicates anything other than a more effective level of detection.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think that the problem is significantly worse in Northern Ireland than it is here.
Yeah.
But they are more mature in their systems of detection and identification. And I think that that does suggest that we are under-recording here, and particularly with children, for example, where you know, the number of children being detected, even as a proportion of the overall total here, is lower. So it is, we're getting better at detecting it. Last year we had the highest number of victims being identified so far. That indicates, I think, we're getting a more accurate picture, we're reaching more people, but we still have a long way to go.
And the victims then, are they, do they overwhelmingly represent certain communities, migrant communities, or people from lower socioeconomic groups, or who?
I mean, in Ireland, the groups that are being identified are predominantly from outside of Ireland, and the single biggest geographical source is from Africa. There are also victims from Asia and from South America, but Africa is the most represented, and that's particularly when it comes to exploitation for sexual purposes. And we're talking about women and girls from Africa as being the largest cohort of that. And these are people that are very often particularly vulnerable and open to domination. They don't have support networks here, and they're very much at risk.
When you say then you want to move to this all of society approach, where you've got all of these stakeholders feeding in information, not just a kind of a Justice Department view of everything. Who are those stakeholders? Who are you talking about? Give me a few examples. I mentioned schools earlier, but do you mean, you know, private sports clubs, for example, that kids might be engaged with and suddenly kind of disappear off the scene? Are you talking about homework clubs? Are you talking about other stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking in the first instance about the primary social services and then the community and voluntary organisations that are working with communities that have the highest risk. And they need to then to be resourced and equipped.
Yeah. Healthcare professionals?
Yeah.
I mean, every child, be they trafficked or otherwise, is going to need kind of a healthcare intervention at some point. So they'll turn up on somebody's radar.
Yeah. And very often, you know, those type of professionals are trying to respond to the problem as they see it at the moment, but the systems and processes aren't strong enough for them.
Yeah.
I mean, another dimension of it is that when victims are identified, as well as having assurances that they won't be prosecuted or they won't be deported, they also have to have a safe place to go, because they could be, you know, a target of being re-victimised by the people that trafficked them in the first place. And one of the real problems we have in Ireland is that what's most likely to happen for somebody who's identified as a victim is they're then transferred into IPASS accommodation. Now, that's congregated setting, it's completely inappropriate for somebody who has been the victim of very often a very traumatic experience. And we know that it's also a location where they could be at risk of being re-victimised. So there was a dedicated facility developed in recent years, run by community and voluntary sector, which was specifically for victims of trafficking, for female victims of, of trafficking. Now, that is a very small capacity, but it needs now to be resourced and expanded. You know, if somebody has been through a traumatic experience, maybe the victim of serious crime over a number of months or even years, they need to have a safe place where they can hopefully start to recover and build their life up together.
We're very tight in time, but I'm you know, I assume elements of identity fraud and everything go hand in hand with this in terms of moving people over borders and everything else. Would a system of national ID cards help?
I mean, there are wider questions about migration control as well. I mean, I think if you're talking about a national ID card system, you know, if you're talking about people coming from other parts of the world, how that would interact and how that would be relevant, I'm not quite sure. And obviously there are human rights and privacy concerns about an ID card system. One of the big challenges, I think, in the next year is going to be that the EU Migration Pact is now going to overhaul our wider system of migration and international protection coming into the country. And that is going to have systems of identification coming in place, but it's also talking about accelerating the decision-making process. The concern, I think, that we would have is that we're already missing a lot of victims as it stands, and particularly missing child victims. If you're accelerating the decision-making process, how are you going to ensure that victims are properly assessed? And I think that's going to be one of the really big challenges for the Oireachtas and the government over the next year, is that we introduce the relevant legislation in that space. So we have challenges at the moment, but if we're trying to make these decisions in a shorter space of time, you know, that does make it much more difficult. And it's not an easy solution. It's not an easy problem for the government to solve. It will require a lot more resources and specialisation. So, look, I think we're making progress.
Yeah.
But it's a very serious issue that's going to require a lot more resources in the years to come.
Liam Herrick, Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. Liam, thanks a million.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.